Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the Golf Shake podcast. This week, me and Matt have got tons to cram into the programme. We've had the FedEx Cup come to its conclusion. We've had Ryder Cup movers and shakers even more this week. We've got tournaments to look forward to on the DP World Tour. But first, let me introduce my co-host, Mr. Matt Holbrook. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you? Very good, actually. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, I thought I'd double down on that because it's... So I've just mentioned, firstly, apologies, I've got a little bit of a tickly cough.
Okay.
I'm going to try and mute it when I'm coughing, but sometimes I'm going to have to just cough if I'm talking. I'm really good, actually. I've had a very solid weekend of golf, which we're definitely going to talk about at some point.
Okay, cool. Nice to be out on the golf course. Bank holiday weekends are normally a pretty busy time for us here at the golf club at Howley Hall. It's busy today. So we're talking to you, it's Bank Holiday Monday at the moment. We've got a pretty packed tee sheet sort of till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, really, from sort of first group was out at 7. So pretty much every 10 minutes till then. So there's plenty of people out there on the golf course and enjoying what is quite a nice day here in Leeds, to be honest. It's been a little cool first thing in the morning, But it's shaping up into quite a nice sunny day, really. We've had a bit of rain last couple of days and some of it very, very heavy as well. I don't know whether you've got that, Matt, as well.
No. So actually, yes, we had some rain in the evening, but it's been nice. So I've, as you said, it's 11 o'clock. I've already been out and played golf this morning and we had a lovely, lovely morning as the sun come up over here. The course is just, it looked incredible. It's playing so nice. Unfortunately, I do feel for the greenkeepers at the moment because they just can't cut the grass quick enough. Literally, it feels like they're cutting fairways every single day.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure most of them could do as well. And the greens as well. You know, if you don't get out and cut them first thing in the morning, and even if it's pretty wet, the members moan that the greens are slow and all that kind of stuff. You just can't win, can you?
It's just crazy. But we were lucky. So we went out. There were supposed to be three of us today. The person who dropped out, he listens to the podcast, and I want you to know that you missed a lovely morning, you little dropout. So we was the first tee time after the greenkeepers had closed it this morning till 7 to change the pins.
Nice.
So they was cutting it, so we had like fresh greens. We followed them around. It was perfect. We got around in like 2.5 hours.
Perfect.
It's Bob on, really. It's exactly what you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's my ideal early morning round of golf, really. Get round, get done, have some breakfast and, crack on with the rest of the day. But, yeah, I mean, I haven't played this last week, but we sort of alluded to it last week on the podcast. We've got the Pro-Am here at Howley Hall this Friday, which I'm looking forward to. So we've got quite a few teams in for that. We've just had a load of new tee signage delivered, some sponsorship boards and stuff like that, which are going out. Some of which are from Golf Shake, which look pretty cool. So they'll be going out on one of the tees before the Howley Hall Pro-Am on Friday. So, yeah, it's shaping up to be a decent field, really, and hopefully some good scores, and hopefully everyone enjoys the day. But that's kind of what my next week consists of, really, getting ready for that, as well as your normal day-to-day stuff here at the club and lessons and custom fittings, etc. But pretty busy. But let's look at the world of professional golf then, Matt. So one of the biggest, sort of, if not the biggest money-wise weekend of the year, with the FedEx Cup coming to its conclusion. We spoke about this last week on the pod and kind of spoke about who we thought would be the kind of movers and shakers, and you know, I went with Scheffler and you kind of said you couldn't see it coming out of anyone outside that sort of top four. And you know, Victor Hovland's performance again 2 weeks in a row was just amazing, wasn't it?
It's not a bad way to make $20+ million, is it, in two weekends of golf?
It'll do.
It certainly will do. From a personal perspective, being a bit of a Rory fan, it was a shame that he had them issues with his back. He was clearly struggling on the first day. And I felt like at that point, you know, he kind of gave himself too much to do. It's nice to get a European winner, that's for sure. We don't mind that, do we?
Yeah, and particularly with the Ryder Cup coming up, I think it kind of only enhances what we were saying last week about the Ryder Cup, in that we've got you know, probably four or five absolutely world-class players, Hovland being one of them, who's now officially booked his ticket to Rome. And so we've got three players confirmed in the team now. And obviously, a fair few places up for grabs still. So, you know, we've kind of had some movement in the points lists. We've had certain players kind of jumping up a little bit, some slipping down a little bit. And yeah, I mean, it's just making Luke Donald's job even tougher, I think, to be honest.
It definitely is. And we did have a scenario on, Friday in particular. Those people that follow me on Instagram would have seen that I posted a couple of screenshots of the European Tour leaderboard, because it almost felt like every player that you could have maybe had a conversation about being a potential pick for the Ryder Cup was like shooting the lights out, was like in the mix, apart from Shane Lowry. And you know, I've shared my thoughts on Shane Lowry, nothing personal, but it's not that I'm a big fan. I think for the amount that people talk about him and how good his short game is supposed to be, I just expect to see him doing better than what he normally does. And maybe that's my problem, not his, but it's definitely, I think it definitely feels like a bit of an issue that he doesn't play.
I'm sure he's nervous about whether he's going to get in the team or not, because he's not an automatic pick, which really someone of his caliber should be. You know, he should be in the sort of form and in the sort of brackets of your Fleetwoods and, I'd say Fleetwoods, Fitzpatricks of this world that are pretty much guaranteed to be going. Do you know what I mean? They're
there.
And he's very much in there. I'd probably put Tyrrell Hatton in that bracket as well. And those guys kind of are definitely outperforming him at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with I'm a bit of a Tyrrell Hatton fan. The thing with Tyrrell Hatton is when he wins big events.
Yeah,
And that's why I think he's got that. He's got that about him where I feel like put him in a pressure situation, I feel like he will do well. He doesn't really have a weakness. He just needs everything to come together.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, he's an exceptionally good player and Liverpool fan as well, which is obviously even better. But yeah, I mean, that's not the only reason I like him. But yeah, no, he's just a very, very good golfer. But one thing that's disappointed me with Scheffler really over this last few days, I mean, to shoot 71, 1 over, 65, good in the second round, 5 under, 73, 3 over, and then 70. So he's finished 1 under for 4 rounds. I mean, that's for him, he'll be very disappointed with that.
Yeah, he's streaky at the moment.
He started 10 under, so he shot 11 under. Well, he is 11 under for the four rounds. I mean, that's just not going to get the job done. You know, when you compare that to Hovland, who's 19 under for four rounds, you're just not going to compete. I mean, you're just not close enough. You know, even with the 10 shot sort of lead he had over the bottom guys, I mean, it's just not enough. And, you know, Hovland to win the last 2 weeks and to obviously win the FedEx Cup, and he's peaking at the right time, and, you know, that's more power really to the European team, and I hope that carries on. I mean, you know, you're looking at the guys we've got in our team already, and they're all playing good golf at the minute, which is good. So, it's a great situation to be in. I mean, when the caveat to that, I mean, when you're looking at the US team, I mean, I would say, like I said last week, I think they're going to be, whoever they pick, they're going to be extremely strong, and the depth is better than the European team, I would say, but the kind of, I don't know, last four or five players that are going to get in their team is a bit of a question mark, isn't it? I mean, that, you know, looking at the FedEx Cup here, we've got players like Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, Keegan Bradley, who I think has to play. Cantlay is obviously going to go, and Wyndham Clark. But you look at their actual kind of return for this season. So players like Patrick Cantlay hasn't won this year. Do you know what I mean? He's obviously doing well. He's had 10 top 10s. His consistency's there, but he hasn't won. Whereas you look at someone like Lucas Glover, who's won twice and had 5 top 10s. I mean, what would you rather have? I don't know. It's a it's a big, big decision, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a big decision. And you know what? I don't think, obviously, they won't just go on results alone, will they? They'll have their stats guys looking at it because, you know, yeah. The first thing you do is you look at Patrick Cantlin and you think, okay, he hasn't won. But has he been, you know, has he been in the top 10, you know, so many more times than anybody else this year? For example, I'm not saying he hasn't. I'm just as an example.
10 top 10s is what he's had.
Yeah. Right? So you look at that. So there's obviously a level of consistency to his game.
But then you have Wyndham Clark, who's had 8 top 10s, but won twice. I mean, yeah. that for me picks him straight ahead of Patrick Cantlay.
I think you look at, you know, and Dave will be looking at what types of course was this? What was the strength of field?
Yeah.
You know, what was his, you know, because, you know, historically, the Europeans, when they're at home, they'll set the course up, you know, they'll pinch the fairways in, they'll grow the rough, they'll make it as hard as possible for the American side. So, you know, if somebody wins, I don't know, with, you know, a higher strokes gained off the tee, for example, that's, you know, going to be maybe beneficial to them. And they'll look into so many different things that whatever they do, they'll feel like, you know, they've got the right conclusion. And look, you know, you can't take everyone. You know, and if somebody like Lucas Glover misses out, I'm sure he'd be massively disappointed. But I also feel like you can't legislate for pick, you know, you can't pick everyone, and there is going to be somebody that you could argue for that will miss out, and
for me, that person at the bit. I mean, Glover is a divided opinion. I mean, for me, I would pick him, but I'm a huge fan of his, and I have been for a long time. Since before he even won the US Open, I thought he was going to be a top player in the world. He obviously hasn't kind of lived up to that for obvious reasons that we spoke about last week with the sort of yips he's been going through, particularly for the last 5 or 6 years. But he seems to have sorted it out. And whether that means he's going to get a pick, I don't know. I don't know what Zach Johnson's thinking at the minute. But for me, Colin Morikawa is the one who's got to miss out because he's not won. And, I mean, he's had 6 top 10s and no wins. So for me, that's just not good enough for him.
No.
And a player, you know, he's obviously, you know, multiple major champion, won the Open at a canter at St. George's, and he just hasn't really done a lot since. Do you know what I mean?
But then again, you know, he's a guy who still is close to the top of the strokes gained to the green, you know, iron play. You know, so actually when you think for the first 3 days at a Ryder Cup, for the first 2 days at Ryder Cup, right, you're going to have some foursome situations where you plan alternate shots. And if you've got a player that you could almost guarantee he's going to hit a fairway, and then if you've got a player like Morikawa, who you can almost guarantee can walk up there and, you know, hit an iron, you know, pretty close, and he could be really handy as a foursome player, then you've got a decision to make. Do you take someone based on the fact that he could play 2 solid matches? Do you put him in a foursome situation where it's, you know, in effect better ball, and, you know, the shackles are off him a little bit because he can relax a little bit more if you've got someone that he's shooting the lights out, and he might thrive in that scenario. So you could always make an argument for everything, couldn't you, really? That's what I find fascinating about it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it, we're not really going to know for a few weeks, are we? But yeah,
no.
I mean, there's arguments for and against. I mean, even in the European team, we saw Matt Wallace have such a good finish this week. He's jumped right up there again and probably asking questions of certain players on there too. And who knows? I mean, the form he's in, he could go ahead and win this week in Cran, and you never know. I mean, it's just such a...
Well, he was one, 4 years ago, who won twice in a run-up, didn't he, and didn't get picked.
Yeah, that's right, which I thought at the time was a bit harsh.
It probably was, but at the time, you probably had a lot of players that are not going to go this time, like your Ian Poulters, like your Sergio Garcias, like your Lee Westwood, that maybe were relying on a pick. And that's why he missed out. This time, I don't think we've got that. No. You know, and it changes every 5-10 minutes on that leaderboard on Friday.
I still think he needs a really good finish to get himself in the conversation again. I mean, he's kind of on the periphery of it at the moment, but I don't think he's really in with a shout. I mean, for me, McIntyre's probably, I reckon he's going, to be honest. I reckon he's picked.
See, I wouldn't take him.
You wouldn't, no?
No, I wouldn't take him because I don't think in the events that he plays well in, I think there's a lot of hype over him.
If you look at where he is on the European points list, I mean, there's only a few players, you know, there's only like Rahm and McIlroy above him. So, I mean, he's doing all right.
He's doing okay. But I mean, look, I looked at the, because I screenshotted this, I don't know what round this was. And at the time, when I'm looking at the leaderboard, I hadn't even put a star on Matt Wallace's name.
No.
Because at the time, he wasn't in the conversation. He's only really come into the... In fact, I posted a poll on my Instagram saying, is this guy in the mix? And so many people said no. And then he obviously has a really good, solid week. But, you know...
But, I mean, he's had a couple of tournaments this year where I think he's done quite nicely and obviously qualified for the Open and, went through the... I think he won the qualifying at one course there and did absolutely amazing. But he's just been a bit streaky, and I think for the last few years, we kind of expect him to kick on a little bit from where he was just missing out on the Ryder Cup. Whether that hit him hard for a little while, I don't know. But, yeah, he seemed to play quite a bit over in America, didn't he? And now he's playing a bit more in Europe again. So who knows? We're going to see a bit of a end-of-season kind of sprint towards the Ryder Cup from Matt Wallace. I hope we do, because I think he's exactly the sort of player that you'd like in your team, because he's a very fierce competitor and, again, doesn't really seem to have much in the way of weaknesses, I wouldn't have said, when you look at his game.
I could see him pairing with Tyrrell Hatton really well.
Yeah.
I generally could. I wouldn't want to come up against him too.
No, either.
But Friday afternoon, I was watching it, and you had Nicolai Højgaard, Ludvig Åberg, Adrian Meronk, Yannick Paul, Robert McIntyre, Victor Perez, all in the top 30.
Yep.
Then you had Rasmus Højgaard under par, and it was only Shane Lowry at one under who missed the cut.
Yeah.
And that was before I'd put a star on Matt Wallace's name, so you can chuck his name into the mix. So look, this week's going to be incredible, right? It's one of my favourite weeks. I love this golf course.
Yeah, me too. We just fortunate of where I am. I had Marcus and Dan were both here over the last 2 days doing some practice and using the room upstairs and hitting some shots. Marcus was working on a few things in his game up there. He was doing a bit of putting, and I played a couple of times with Dan last week, just went out for 3 or 4 holes here and there and just chatting with him. And yeah, they were both like just so giddy about going to Cran, really, and how fantastic it is. And I think Dan was taking most of his family, I think, out with them. And, you know, Marcus was taking his fiance out there and stuff. And I think they're just looking forward to it. I think they just love the place, which, you know, from seeing it on TV, why wouldn't you? I mean, it just looks so picturesque and beautiful. And I think they both quite like the golf course because it's fairly tough and it's fairly kind of tight and tricky to get round. So I think those sorts of golf courses maybe suit those two quite nicely. And certainly when you look at the people that have won round there previously, it doesn't tend to be someone who bombs it. It tends to be someone who kind of is very good at kind of fiddling their way around, I suppose, really. So, who knows? That hopefully both of them have a great week. But some of the people we've just spoken about in the run to the Ryder Cup, I mean, Fitzpatrick's won around there before. You could see him doing well. And, I'd really like to see Matt Wallace do well again. We can't go too far ahead of ourselves without talking about Todd Clements' performance as well. I mean, the final round 63 that he shot there in Prague to win his first DP World Tour event was very, very impressive. He's obviously not in the conversation for the Ryder Cup right now, but I mean, to come through and kind of shoot what is probably your best ever round of golf in a professional tournament in the final round to win is damn impressive too.
Very impressive. Very impressive. So I don't know if you saw, did you see on Twitter yesterday? I posted it a couple of times.
I try and avoid my social media as much.
Yeah, I know. So Todd Clements used to be a junior member at the golf course that I was a member at. And we are both winners of the Cone Valley Golf Club Net Club Championships. Todd won it in 2000. And, Todd won it in 2010. I won it in 2015.
Wow.
So it was nice. I mean, you know, he's a local lad to us. We know, he'd left and moved on before I joined there, but lots of people that I still know from that golf club know of Tom and obviously watched him as a junior grow up. So it was, really,
really on that same trajectory. Then you could be a European Tour winner in 5 years, like Todd. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, stranger things have happened. Probably not. but yeah, no, it was good. Good for him. He's didn't look like it looked like he was putting to a whole size of a bucket, didn't he?
Yeah,
absolute monsters.
I mean, that's what has to happen when you're playing. I remember him holding. Did he hold like a 40-yard foot or one?
I think it was one like a 60, 70 foot.
Oh, absolute monster, yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to shoot around like that, some things like that have to happen for you, and certainly they did for him there. But yeah, this week in Cran, it's going to be a great tournament. It's going to be a really good test of golf because the weather doesn't look amazing either. So it looks like it might be quite cold at times, and I guess up there it gets fairly windy. From talking to the guys here, getting used to the altitude and how far the ball goes up there takes a bit of doing when you first get there as well. So it tends to be those people who've got very good control of distance and kind of know where all their clubs are going, which I guess at this level most of them do, but some are better than others. You know, you think of the Bernard Langers of this world who are absolutely unbelievable in terms of judging distance and things like that. There'll be players out there on the European Tour that are, or the DP World Tour as it is now, that are just as kind of deadly accurate with irons and things like that, which is why you've probably seen players like Fitzpatrick do well around there in the past. And, you know, who knows, he may win it again. But yeah, I mean, have you got any sort of pick? Have you looked at the entry list? Have you seen anyone that you think's
no
in with a shout or...
No, I mean, I haven't. No, because I've been out to play golf this morning. I've not looked at the field or anything like that this week. It's an event where I almost don't want that to kind of. Some weeks I pick players and I really want someone to do well. Or I might chuck a couple of quid on, and then it kind of takes away the enjoyment for me. But this is just a week where I like to kick back and just watch as much golf as possible because I just love the course. I just think it's outstanding.
It does look really cool. I mean, for me, ones that jump out straight away, you don't have to look too far down the entry list. You've got the likes of Matt Fitzpatrick, you've got Danny Willett, you've got Victor Perez, all the names we've just mentioned who are in contention for Ryder Cup spots. Torbjörn Olofsson is another one who I think is, you know, if he could have a decent finish in the run-in, he may get himself a pick as well. Both the Højgaards that we've spoken about, it'd be great to get both of them up there in a position where they kind of pick themselves as well. There's a few Swiss players that have got some starts as well that might not feature. I don't want to write them all out, but your man Ludvig Åberg in there again as well. So, I think we're in for a good tournament, and who knows who we're going to see on the Sunday. But I think you're going to be looking at one of the sort of more established names potentially that wins this tournament. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. But, I think Fitzpatrick is a good bet.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Matt Wallace win.
No, I'd love that as well. Yeah, either of those two would suit me down to the ground, really. But, it's just interesting. And then we've got a really good run of events as well coming up towards the sort of next few weeks. We've obviously got the Irish Open at the K Club, which is going to be a pretty strong field. And then, you know, we're not too far away from Wentworth, are we?
Well, when you look at it, you look at the list, you've got the K Club, then you've got Wentworth, then you've got the French Open at the Golf National, and then we've got the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh. Yeah. And then after that, one of my favourite events.
Does the team actually get picked? You know that.
I think normally, does he not do it after Wentworth?
After Wentworth, yeah. That makes sense. You're not going to leave it till the French Open, are you? Yeah, we've got that BMW Championship out of the way. We'll know. So we've got basically three weeks of hard tournament play, and we'll see. I mean, the purse at the Irish Open's massive, so you're probably going to see some guys coming across for that. You know, some other players that we've seen on the periphery potentially. We've spoken about Shane Lowry, but I'd be surprised if you didn't have players like Seamus Power and people like that coming across and playing and giving themselves a chance of maybe qualifying. But yeah, we'll see. But we've got, it's just exciting, isn't it? It's a great mm-hmm. time of the year to sort of get involved in watching golf and enjoying what's going on. So Right, that's our look at professional golf. Let's have a bit of a chat then about what seems to be a bit, has become a weekly kind of feature of this podcast now, where we find out how your man Matt Lockwood's getting on and whether he's actually qualified for the Pinder Trophy yet. So I'll let you tell everyone what's going on.
Yeah. So he hasn't. He's actually away again.
Simple as that.
Yeah. It's simple as that. We've got to give him a pass this week because he's away again with the family. So.
Says that he's probably gone for a lesson somewhere and he's grinding away on the practice.
Yeah, but he did say, like, so last week before he went away, he said he's got this new mini driver thing in his bag, and he's like, he reckons he's got a big September. But I'll tell you what, I feel like he's putting himself under a little bit of pressure because, you know, I think the Pinder is on the 15th of October, so he ain't got long.
No, he hasn't. He needs to get himself going. Peaking towards the end of the season, like some of our Ryder Cup hopefuls we've been talking about. Right, so we've got two little features we're going to talk about today on the podcast. We're just going to spend a few minutes on each one. But the first one, you kind of mentioned this, and I actually did see on your social media, you kind of talked about this a little bit. And it's kind of the journey you go on during every round of golf. And it's the kind of roller coaster ride that we all go on. Sometimes we start bad, sometimes we play bad all the way through, sometimes we rescue it, sometimes we start great and finish badly. And it's a very difficult kind of, well, it's a very difficult sport to kind of stay the same all the way through a round, isn't it? But I think that's, you know, talk to me about what you go through when you're playing golf. I mean, I'll talk a bit about what I kind of feel and think in a minute, but yeah, it was you that brought this up, so I'd be interested to see what you're going to say.
Yeah, look, so I mean the only reason I brought it up, right, is because it's almost exactly what I've experienced this weekend. And I think the level that everybody plays at is different, right? But I think what the experience is at the end is always the kind of always the same. There's just ability levels. Okay, so What amazes me about this game is, regardless of what the score is, right, the score is a score. So, just for example, right, on Saturday this week, I shot 76, which is 7 over for me.
Okay.
If you'd have said to me at the start of the round, you're going to shoot 7 over today, I probably would have, if you'd have said, look, you can stick or twist now, 7 over, I probably would have, I wouldn't have stuck. I would have twisted because I felt like at the moment I was playing okay. But then at the same time, I knew Saturday was going to be quite a slow round of golf for me for a couple of different reasons. There was a medal happening that I wasn't playing in. I decided that I was going to play in the medal on Sunday instead of Saturday. But ultimately, 76 is 76, right? You can't change that number. And that number is the only thing that really matters. But as I stood on the 14th tee, I think I was like 1 over, 2 over. And then I dropped 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shots in the next 4 holes.
Yep.
So I've shot 7 over, but I've dropped 5 shots, in effect, for argument. So I've dropped 5 shots in the last 5 holes.
Which feels like 20 over straight away.
So that feels like 20 over. But I was happy with the fact that I'd made the right decision, because I knew as we got onto the 16th tee, we kind of enter in the 5th hour of play. And that, for me personally, is just a little bit too long. So then Saturday comes along, and I'm feeling really, really good, right? I've got off to a pretty solid start. I was 1 over on the front with just a bogey on our stroke index 1. I then birdie the 11th, bogey the 14th, birdie the 15th. So I'm now stood on the 16th tee, level par. I'm thinking, right, here we go. You know, like, I'm not... A lot of people will say, oh, you're thinking about the score too much. I think, if you are not thinking about the score, then especially in a medal, right, then I think that that's something to do with potentially the levels, or you may be somebody that doesn't play in competitions as much. Like, I almost think it's impossible not to think about your score. And I think the more you say don't think about the score, the more you're likely to think about the score. But this is the interesting thing, right? So look, I shot 73 in the medal on Saturday, which was to handicap for me. 4 over, but I double bogeyed 16 and I double bogeyed 17, right? So again, if you'd have said to me at the start, look, you're going to shoot 73 today, I probably would have taken it in the middle. If you make a double bogey in the first, if you make two double bogeys in the, and this is the interesting part, right? 73 is 73. You can't change that number. I'm happy with that number.
Yeah.
But when you stood on the 16th tee level par, to make two double bogeys when you're playing really well, like I felt like I had it on a bit of string. And then I thought, do you know what? Like, it stings. It ruins your afternoon. It does for me. But then I thought, how differently would I have felt if I'd have double bogeyed the second and the third and gone on to shoot four over? You'd be over the moon, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because you're four over through three. And I was like, why does the journey that we go on, why does it matter so much? Like, is it the only sport where that journey matters so much? Like, I just find it.
I think a lot of other sports are so reactive, aren't they? You're kind of reacting to what is happening around you and kind of what's, you know, take football, for instance. You can only react to, like, where the ball is on the pitch and what, you know, and what you do doesn't always influence the game, does it? Do you know what I mean? It's like, whereas in golf, everything you do does, because it's obviously an individual sport. But yeah, I mean, and tennis being an individual sport, you know, in singles anyway, is also reactive, because you're reacting to the ball being hit at you by somebody else. And we just get so much time to think in this sport, don't we? That it's very, you know, you can, there's just so much you can think about, isn't there? And you, like you say, you can get lost in either the score you're shooting at the minute, or kind of where you feel like you should be, or how everyone else is doing in the field. And that's the one thing I've been guilty of in the past, is thinking kind of, you know, I'll get to a golf course and think, well, so-and-so or someone's going to shoot this round here today. Do you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, how the heck am I going to get it round in that sort of a number? When, and then sometimes I've played in a way that I've been far too aggressive, thinking I need to shoot three or four under when actually level or one under is good. Do you know what I mean? And that's a difficult thing. I guess trying to separate what other people are doing to what you're doing is one thing I find quite difficult sometimes playing professionally. But I suppose,
yeah, because I'm not leaderboard watching, right? I'm at a level where I feel like, you know, I'm getting four shots. I feel like whether it's a Stableford or a medal, I feel like I've got more chance in a medal. But I feel like if it's a Stableford, for example, like I'm kind of always expecting someone to come in with like 40, 41 points. So I'm kind of not doing it for that. I'm doing it to beat myself, to beat my handicap, to get my handicap lower. So I can understand how it might be slightly difficult for pros. Like, you know, if you're a professional, you're going because you want to play well and maybe pick up a few quid. You know, I'm lucky that I can chuck an extra quid in the lowest gross pot, or I can chuck an extra quid in the twos pot.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've got a chance there. But yeah, it's just mad. So I've been out this morning, and I woke up today. My index today, off after yesterday's round, my index today is the lowest it's ever been, 3.6. So I've gone out this morning, this morning I've shot one better. So I've shot 72 this morning, three over.
Okay.
So again, like, I'm over the moon, because I've shot three over and four over consecutive days.
Yeah.
You know, both are going to be really, really, you know, both are really good counters for me in regards to the handicap. You know, today I've barely missed a fairway. But as I'm sitting here, like, just thinking about the round, I'm thinking, do you know what? I lipped out for eagle on the first. So I hit the green in two on the first, which is a par five. And I left myself about 12 foot with a three iron for eagle. And it does break a lot, our first green. I lipped out that putt for eagle, but obviously made the birdie.
Yeah.
I think I missed three greens with a wedge in my hand from about 130 yards and less, which again, I know for some people, they might be thinking, oh, well, that's okay. But you know, you do have to appreciate the levels. So if I'm hitting a fairway on a 308-yard par four and I've got 120 yards to the green, you know, like, for me, I'm not expecting to hit every single green, but like one of them I missed by 20 yards. Like, it was just a really crappy strike.
You're going to hit some of them, mate.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that, like, I had a three-putt bogey on the 10th. I missed a birdie putt on 15 from about 6 foot. And I lipped out for birdie on the 18th. So I'm sitting in now thinking, well, that three over could have been a level par this morning. I'm not haven't got the ump. I'm not sitting here thinking today, oh, I should have shot that. But you can't help as golfers, like, we can't help but think, you know, like, the journey today was slightly different to the journey yesterday. Hit the ball lovely today.
You know, we spoke last week. I played, obviously, in the 36-hole event and the week before. And the first 8 holes, I was just, I wasn't that bad. But I was 6 over for 8 holes, having had a 9 on a par 5 when I was, like, going in with a 7-iron. I just had a couple of back spasms, which is, you know, another thing. It's not an excuse, but it's been happening a bit this year. But then, so I'm 6 over after 8, thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be an absolute car crash. And then I've shot 5 under par for the next 10 holes to shoot one over. Do you know what I mean? that has come from nowhere. And what I would say is, would I have shot 5 under for those 10 if I hadn't already been 6 over for the first 8? Do you know what I mean? Would I have shot that score? I don't know. Maybe I'd have, you know, if I was level par for those 8 holes, would I have been something like 1 under for those 10? Do you know what I mean? So you're only actually 2 shots different. But
yeah, no, it's crazy. Like
it is mad.
The psychology of it and the way that the mind works for this game, like, you know, I'll put it to the listeners, you know, like, why does the journey to the number mean more than the actual number?
Yeah, well, it does, but then you...
But why does it affect you more?
Yeah, well, it does. I mean, whenever you sort of listen to the best players when they talk about mental state on the golf course, I think what they try and do is keep themselves as even as possible all the way around, so they don't get too high, they don't get too low when something goes wrong, and they just kind of, you know, if they make 3 or 4 birdies in a row, they don't get too excited about it. If they, you know, and whereas me or you would, do you know what I mean? If we're like 4 under after 5 holes, we're thinking, Jesus, how good am I? And then you go for shots that you're not capable of, or you do silly things and sort of fritter those shots away. Whereas those guys don't. They kind of just keep it nice and steady and just pick up a birdie here and there and just kind of, it's just so even and there's less peaks and troughs in their emotions, isn't there? And that's why they're so good and so consistent. And I think that's what, particularly me not playing much tournament golf, that's where I struggle. When I do play in tournaments, I find it very difficult to regulate myself. And I think that leads to more bad scores than good, really. And you kind of can't deal with, we all get bad breaks, bad bounces, things that happen that, you know, you think only happens to you and doesn't happen to anybody else. But we kind of get a little bit too preoccupied with that. And we don't really focus on the fact that we just need to keep nice and calm and put a score together and just take, it's easy to say that cliche of just taking each hole at a time and just play the hole you're on. But that's all you can do, isn't it? You can't alter what anyone else is doing on the golf course. And you also can't alter too much about the end score by thinking about, you know, what are holes to come. Just play the hole that you're playing and see, and do your best and see what score you come out with on that hole, and then start again.
Absolutely.
So you're almost playing like 18 rounds in one, aren't you?
Yeah.
Players is a separate one, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It'd be good to hear from some of you guys listening as to what, are there any coping mechanisms you have out on the golf course? Is there anything you do that kind of keeps you calm? Anything that you do that really helps you to get through when you're playing badly, or do you just kind of write it off as a bad round and carry on? But yeah, it'd be good to hear from you in that regard. But yeah, it's a good point, Matt, to be honest.
Yeah, stupid game. I love it though.
It's like a drug, isn't it? It's just addictive. But
yeah,
the other thing that we're going to talk about just for the last sort of 5 minutes here, I mean, we're lucky in the position at Golf Shake where we get sent new equipment all the time to test, to look at, to kind of give our feedback on to you guys who are potentially going to buy it or go get fitted or try it or whatever. But what we were talking about, Matt, was kind of the way that golf companies now almost drip feed equipment into the market throughout the season. And I get to some extent why they do it, but does it frustrate you guys as consumers and as, you know, punters, really, I suppose, for these brands and kind of being marketed to all the time with the latest and greatest stuff that's coming out? Do you get frustrated with the regularity at which product is coming out? And it's kind of sparked by, obviously, Callaway have got a new iron range in the Apex family. But yes, it was due an overhaul, don't get me wrong. It's been out for, you know, two seasons, maybe a little bit more now, the current Apex line that they've got. But they haven't replaced the entire line. They've replaced almost the kind of mid to lower handicappers ones. So we've got a new Apex Pro, we've got a new Apex CB, which has replaced Apex TCB, and an Apex MB, which has replaced the current model. Last month, we had a new P790 from TaylorMade, so just one model of iron, but the rest of the P series changed earlier on in the year. I guess what I'm saying is, do you think they're doing it to just get injections of sales at certain times of the year, or do you think they're doing it just to sort of stay in people's mind that product is still coming all the time?
So if you're asking me what I think, right, I think it's a pure market ploy to keep in people's minds. Because I think golf clubs, especially irons, for example, are you can't manufacture somebody's need or want for new irons. I think what happens with golfers, right, is they might have a set of irons for 5 or 6 years, or they might turn 30, they might hit a milestone and think, right, I'm going to treat myself to an irons, because I promised if I ever got to a single figure handicap, I'll treat myself to a new irons, which...
Yeah, or you get like a bonus at work.
And at that point, obviously, you then start having a look at what's available on the market at the time.
Yeah.
I never understand people that get annoyed or frustrated at manufacturers bringing out new equipment, because no one's forcing anybody to go out and buy the latest pieces of equipment all the time. I don't know many people that have new clubs every single year, for example. If they do, they're trading in a driver, so there's still a bit of value on last year's model, and that's fine if people want to do that as well. I think you guys, when I say you guys as in club professionals, I think it makes it difficult for you, because from a consumer standpoint, I can't keep up with all the models. I can't keep up with, you know, all the models and the brands and the TPs this and the P5s that and the G450s and the TSR. You know, there just seems like there's so much going on all the time. I don't know how you guys do it.
No, I mean, it's difficult. And to be honest, from a stocking perspective, it's hard as well, because you've kind of got to almost second guess the manufacturers, because you want to get rid of the stuff that's going to be replaced, don't you? The last thing you want is a set of irons that's now not current sat in your shop, isn't it? And sometimes the manufacturers aren't particularly great in helping you shift that through. Some of them are better than others, don't get me wrong. But also, as a retailer and as someone that I feel is in a position of trust, when someone comes to me and wants a new set of golf clubs, right? Say they came 2 months ago or 3 months ago for a set of TaylorMade P790, and I fitted them for them. They've paid whatever they've paid for them. And then a new one comes out a month later, which I didn't know was coming out until, you know, 3 weeks after I'd fitted this person and they got a set. I then feel responsible for almost them having an iron that's been replaced and it isn't the current model. I'm sure most consumers don't care, but some do.
Yeah.
And I would want to know that I'm in kind of, not the latest, but one of the latest models that's out at the moment. And I think, you know, with the Callaway release we just talked about, there's actually five models of iron currently or in the old Apex lineup, and they've replaced three of them. So that tells me that there's probably another two coming at some stage. Is that going to be early 2024, or is that going to be just before Christmas? Or you just don't know. That's the thing. So we're still selling Apex and Apex DCB, which have been out for 2 years nearly, to a consumer, knowing that potentially it's pretty much the writing's on the wall that they're going to get replaced, but you just don't know when.
Obviously, you guys, you don't have to stock every manufacturer. You'll have a relationship with, I'm assuming, Hardware, maybe two or three.
I've got like six, but yeah, So, you know, in the fitting center there, trying to keep up with six brands' stuff and what's chopping and changing and what's moving through, and when you get rid of your demo kit to get a decent amount of money for it, and when do you stop selling, you know, look at the current sort of metalwood ranges that everyone's got now. You know, we've got obviously the brands I do. So I've got Stealth 2 in TaylorMade. We've got Paradigm in Callaway. We've got Dynapower in Wilson. We've got Aerojet in Cobra. And G430 in Ping, right? So That's sort of the five main brands that I stock at the moment. I also do a couple of others, but out of those, three definitely out of those five are going to change their metalwood range for next year. So Callaway will, because they always do. TaylorMade will, because they always do. And Cobra will, because they always do. So Ping generally is on a two-year life cycle, so we're good for G430 till probably 2025. But then, yeah, I mean, it's just so difficult. And Wilson is going to, I think Dynapower will stay. I don't know that 100%, so, but potentially it will, because it's done so well this year. So, yeah, you kind of get to the period this time of year now where we're going into like September, October, November time, where you're probably not going to sell any drivers because everyone's waiting for February for the new one. It's very difficult.
But look, I mean, their argument is always going to be that not everybody, you know, so I know people that might get a new driver every year, but it might be a model that's a year old because, you know, I think it's worth remembering that a new driver to a pro shop and to a consumer are two slightly different things. You know, yes, you might not be pulling the wrapper off a brand new driver, but some people will go and get, you know, some people will wait until, I don't know, I can use Cobra as an example, being a Cobra player. You know, some people might have waited until the Aerojet come out before they went and bought the LTDX.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the equipment releases get a bad name because it seems to happen every single year. But don't forget what I say to people. People say to me, oh, you've got the new Cobra. Is it any better than last year's? And I'm like, actually, if you're comparing them every single year, probably not. But then when I look in your bag, mate, and you've got a driver that's 15 years old, it actually doesn't matter whether you go and get a Cobra LTDX or a Cobra Aerojet, you're going to notice a difference. And that's the thing.
A lot of people will, and rightly so, go and test clubs and try them. There's no obligation to buy at most demo days, and certainly, you know, if you come for a fitting here, there isn't. We obviously charge a fee for a fitting, and if you don't buy, that's fine. But, you know, for you to know that you're spending 500 or plus pounds on a driver is not really going to gain you anything. I think that's worth the money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
It's good, but you know, I suppose we're in the business where, you know, we love club releases because we cover them, you know, from a journalism point of view and doing our kind of YouTube content that we film all the time on the channel. But it must be, so for someone who's massively into golf clubs and equipment like I am, if I wasn't in this position where I got to see them early and try them early and things like that, I would be like, I think I would be kind of a bit more annoyed at it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I do get it.
But yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see what you guys think out there as well. Do you wait for the following year to get product? Do you always want the latest thing? Are you not really bothered? Does marketing kind of play a part in your decisions when you're looking at buying stuff? Or do you look at what players are using on tour? Or do you kind of trust the feedback that you get from the likes of us that are doing reviews on it or fitting it day in, day out? It'd be good to hear from you from that perspective.
So, different to any other sports as well, by the way. The kids want new football boots every year. There's nothing wrong with the ones that they've got, but it's a new model. It's not going to make them run faster. It's not going to make them kick harder. You know, like, so it happens in every sport, but yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Matt, that's all we've got time for this week. There's been a lot of stuff we've had to cram into that pretty much 50 minutes that we've been chatting. But yeah, as we've outlined earlier, there's lots of golf coming up. It's coming at us thick and fast now. We're going to enjoy watching the golf from Cram this week. I certainly will. I know you've already said about how you love watching it from there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, next week we'll kind of dissect that, debrief and talk about that and kind of look at who we think now is in the running to be in the Ryder Cup team, which I think is probably going to be the main topic of conversation for the next month or so. But
absolutely,
it'll be good to talk to you again, mate. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening and we'll see you all next week.
Catch you next week.